The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973 for all your insurance needs. And now it's time to break the cover open on a brand new issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This one for April 2023. It's a very green cover because there's lots of trees in full leaf bloom in the background. And there's an old building with brown siding and a well-stained roof, a lot of green on it, and a little waterfall here, and the water is rolling right toward us, and the photographer has got his or her camera very close to the water, and the theme this month is Peace Like a River. And now, as we always do, I'm going to begin with the From Elizabeth column. Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief, has written North Carolina the Magnificent. You are here at the top of the massive Fortana Dam in Graham County, a monumental structure that towers 480 feet above the reservoir below, taller than the Great Pyramid of Giza, wider than Mount Rushmore. From the observation deck, you get a breathtaking view of the dam's concrete wall, 376 feet thick at its base, that holds everything back. The dam's size is significant, memorable, and that's why you come to places like this, to be awed by the impressive scale, to marvel at the extreme. Maybe you've come to this area also to fish, and if so, you're in the right place. The mountain waters of far western North Carolina, Graham, Cherokee, Clay, Swain, Macon, and Jackson counties, swell with record-sized brook trout, brown trout, rainbow trout. Odds are good that you'll go home with a souvenir. The state record for brown trout, a whopping 24 pounds, 10 ounces, belongs to a catch from the Nantahala River about an hour south. Superlatives abound in all 100 counties of North Carolina, from the tallest brick lighthouse in the country, Cape Hatteras, of course, on the Outer Banks, to the highest point east of the Mississippi, Mount Mitchell. And it's easy to admire the grandest things in our landscapes, the panoramic view of Hickory Nut Gorge from the top of Chimney Rock, a dramatic sunset from Jockey's Ridge, the thunderous plume of water cascading from the mighty white water falls in Cashiers. You are here, too, among the smallest things. Sprightly sanderlings scurry on their toothpick legs away from the ocean's edge at Carolina Beach, and thumb-sized fiddler crabs burrow into their holes at Oak Island. At Grandfather Mountain, a light posse of fireflies awakens, readying for their upcoming emergence above the forest floor, miniature floating lanterns that have been illuminating the night long before there ever were campfires, before there were ever any LED lamps. At the Yellow Creek Falls trailhead in Graham County, a short out-and-back hike starts right across the street from the Chioa River, where on the marshy banks the tiniest spring peepers, creatures no bigger than a pebble, trill with their fullest voices. On the trail, You are here among coveted white morel mushrooms, another harbinger of a North Carolina spring. And the path is thick with wildflowers that seem to have sprung up overnight. Edible wood violets, no bigger than dimes. Fire pinks with their eye-catching red flowers popping underfoot. Delicate pink lady slippers, multitudes of chiliums. Here is spring in North Carolina, when nature is at its most generous, its most plentiful, when amid the tallest trees in our forests and beneath our expansive blue skies, we revel in small wonders. A burst of buttercups from a patch of earth, the brightening yellow of a goldfinch on a backyard feeder, and behold, a new season of miracles. And now, as I do at the first reading of every month, I'm going to interpret the pictorial, which they call a photo essay, in the center of the issue of every month's Our State magazine. I'm going to try to help those of you who cannot see it at all or cannot see it well enjoy the beauty of the pictures. Our photo essay this month is Going to the Gospel. Excuse me, Going to the Chapel. About the same thing. Those seeking comfort, peace, or solitude find quiet places for contemplation and prayer at these picturesque destination churches. And this is written by Rebecca Woltz. We have a double-page spread here of a forest scene. It's really the front cover and its continuation onto the right side. In other words, it's a bigger picture, and I just took the left-hand side for the front cover. I already described the green trees, the brown church, and its roof with a little steeple on it, and a small waterfall. It's only a couple of feet tall, and the water rushing toward us as the photographer set his or her camera right down very close to the water and gave it a slightly lengthy exposure so that the water seems to have a white frothy top to it. On the right-hand side, we see a lot more rocks here. They're all different sizes. Some you could call boulders, but there's also a lot of medium-sized ones and small ones in this rocky area of the stream. And right in the middle, it appears that there's a tree, and somehow it's taken hold through all of those rocks and water and soil that it can find underneath. The little caption here says, with little traffic on North Carolina Highway 63, often the only sound that accompanies the whispered prayers of visitors inside the 12-by-14 cedar chapel is the splashing of Friesland Creek. And for, I guess you call it an introduction to this section, it says St. Jude's Chapel of Hope, Trust, and this would describe the tiny building we see in the background. When Beverly Barrichello's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma spread to her liver, spleen, and bone marrow, she prayed to God and St. Jude, the patron saint of lost causes, to save her. She promised that if she lived, she would build a chapel. In 1991, following her miraculous recovery and 8 years in remission, Beverly and her husband Bill built St. Jude's Chapel of Hope in the tiny Madison County community of Trust. Beverly died in 2002 after the cancer returned, but the chapel remains open to others who might also seek healing. Here's a close-up of the building now. It's very small. There are two well-worn stone steps on which a lot of weeds and grass have encroached, leading up to a very well-worn door with a rectangular perhaps stained glass window. It looks like it might be. And on the it's a little entranceway is what it is. So it's like the chapel has a very steep roof and it comes down. But in the front of that, it's almost like a miniature version of that building which houses the door. So it's a small entranceway there. There's a stained glass window above it in somewhat in the shape of a cross. It's got four even fins on it. And then there's a window to the left side, and then there's a square or an oblong window on the side of the building. I'm going to try to read the sign on the building here. It says, St. Jude's Chapel of Hope. I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help. Everyone welcome, stop, rest, and reflect. A close-up of the door handle and a little sign next to it. There's a sign that says, enter and enjoy, always open. I guess there's a lock on the door, but I guess it's never used. From one of the four short pews, the chapel seats only eight. Visitors can pray beneath a stained glass image of St. Jude ministering to the sick. There's a close-up here also of one of the stained glass windows. We see the chapel, two pews on the left, two pews on the right, an oriental rug in the middle leading up to a small, oh, I guess I would call it a lectern, but it's probably more like a kneeling pad because it's facing the rear of the church. It's not facing the pews. And there in the background, and we don't have a close-up of it, is the statue of St. Jude. St. Jude's Chapel of Hope and Trust, beyond a small wooden sign with Psalm 121, I will lift up my eyes into the hills, from whence cometh my help. Carved above an invitation to stop, rest, and reflect, three stone steps rise between two rhododendrons. Through the roughly 180-year-old door that was brought over from England, past the bookcase stacked with free Bibles and notebooks in which visitors sign their names and relay their heartfelt stories, St. Jude's Chapel of Hope welcomes all who seek solace and a place to commune with God. In front of the prayer bench, the altar overflows with mementos, photos of loved ones, a bottle of holy water from Ethiopia, pet collars, obituaries, and scraps of paper scribbled with prayers. Overleaf, Little Cataluchi Baptist Church in Waynesville. The first known homestead in Cataluchi Valley was built 120 years before the establishment of Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Early settlers logged, farmed, and attended Little Cataluchi Baptist Church, built in 1889. The one-room chapel was heated by a solitary wood stove, and services were informal, with the men often stepping outside to whittle, chew tobacco, and shoot the breeze. Regular services ceased after Cataluchi Valley was abandoned in the 1940s, not long after the creation of the park, but descendants of the former residents still gather at the chapel for reunions. They hold services, decorate the headstones in the graveyard, and share meals. The church can be reached by hiking or riding on horseback along a portion of the roughly 5-mile Little Cataluchi Trail lined with rhododendrons and historic cabins of former Cataluchi Valley residents. Big picture here of the outside, a man and a woman talking in front of the church, a little tyke perched on the man's shoulders. It's white clapboard on the outside, and then it has a cupola on the top, which is an odd shingle. It's a very small shingle, but they're curved on the bottom, almost like an upside-down window with a curve at the top instead. And there's a little steeple on top of that. It's had a belfry, that's the proper name, was added to the Little Cataluchi Baptist Church in 1914. Its 400-pound bell can still be rung by pulling a rope hanging inside the sanctuary. Very plain front. There's no windows on the front, but there's four windows on each side of the church. Inside, we see very, very plain white wooden pews, or wooden pews painted white. There's one, two, three, five, six or so on each side, and then a couple along the edge here, perhaps for a choir. A Bible is open. There's a pair of reading glasses. And then right in the center of the church is that wood-burning stove with its round, what do you call it? I think flue, I guess you'd call it, going up to the roof. And there's also a picture of the trail. It's a it's clean trail. It's covered with dead leaves, but there's no bushes or anything growing in it. Overleaf, St. Mary's Church in West Jefferson. Artist Benjamin F. Long IV spent almost 9 years apprenticing under master fresco painter Pietro Anaguni in Florence, Italy. In this ancient art form, pigments are finely ground, mixed with water, and painted onto wet plaster. After returning to his native western North Carolina, Long offered to paint frescoes at several area churches before Father Fulton Hodge of the Parish of the Holy Communion, which splits its services between St. Mary's in West Jefferson and Holy Trinity in Glendale Springs, agreed. Painted between 1974 and 1977, at no cost to the parish, the three frescoes in the chancel of St. Mary's, Mary Great with Child, John the Baptist, and the Mystery of Faith, represent the basic stages of Christians' relationship with God, expectation, preparation, and fulfillment. So on the side, we have a picture of the church. It's got a wooden wide wooden ramp leading up to the front door, so you can get in with a wheelchair. And there's a double front doors. It's got a white entranceway built onto the side of the church, which goes at 90 degrees to it. And they have what appears to be stained glass windows. At the top, rather than rounded, they come up to a triangular top. Inside the frescoes, St. Mary's Church was built out of chestnut, which is now nearly extinct, in 1905. Decades later, artist Benjamin Long added to the church's chancel three examples of a nearly lost art form. So here's Mary with child in her womb. And there's a what looks to be an eclipse of the moon behind her in the sky. Not sure why, but that's what it kind of looks like. And then there is Christ on the cross in the middle with an image presumably of God standing behind in ethereal form with his hands outstretched. And then on the right side, I'm sorry, the middle was John, it says John the Baptist, and then it says the Mystery of Faith. So I'm not really sure what this picture is. On the right side, it's a man dressed in a loincloth and pointing to his head, which is has quite a lot of brown hair in it, and he's holding a staff. So I'll let you interpret that for yourself. Holy Trinity Church in Glendale Springs. Built in 1901, Holy Trinity Church sat empty from the early 1930s until the 1970s. By then, the church had fallen into disrepair and had to be rebuilt. Long and 20 student artists painted the Lord's Supper behind the altar in the summer of 1980, around the time the restoration was completed. In the fresco, Christ is depicted sharing a Passover meal with his disciples, modeled for Long by local community members. On the eve of his crucifixion, across from Jesus, a stool stands empty, an invitation to each of us. And there's the picture. It fills the entire back of the church. Even though the church slopes upwards, the picture continues upwards and fits within the slope. And there is, in fact, that empty stool sitting right in the center, which beckons us. And in the foreground on the right, there is a very small stool and a bowl of presumably containing water and a cloth, which was undoubtedly to wipe the feet of the disciples. And then in front of that, there is a table, and then it's on an oriental rug, and then as we come near the front of the picture, there's a railing, which has a split in it, so it can be opened. and then just the back of one of the pews. It says, every year, tens of thousands of pilgrims visit Long's frescoes at St. Mary's and Holy Trinity churches in Ashe County. Again, turning the page, Little Chapel of God's Love and Trinity. A white steeple added onto the roof of the former smokehouse announces to passing motorists that this one-time farm building is now a church, proving that with a little thought and intention, any building, no matter how modest, could be a place of worship. Inside the chapel, a wooden cross hangs above the altar on a hand-hewn timber wall. Five small crude benches serve as pews, and a weathered King James Bible lies open on a lectern in the corner, available for anyone who may be seeking the Word of God. This is a true log cabin, and the space between the logs is filled with, I don't know what that's called, but kind of a mud or a plaster that's put in there to stop the wind from blowing in. It says in the 1970s, Catherine Mendenhall Smithy moved a small smokehouse to the side of North Carolina Highway 62 in Randolph County and converted it into a chapel for prayer. And you can see the tall steeple, very, very thin, I might add, on top, and an inward opening door with one small step in front. And then there's just a very basic wooden cross with two flowers on top. Which is shown in close-up here. All Saints Chapel is in Raleigh. The Free Church of the Good Shepherd held its first service in its new building on Easter Sunday in 1875. Now known as All Saints Chapel, it was designed by the Reverend Johann A.S. Ortel, a Bavarian immigrant, Episcopal priest, and artist in the Carpenter Gothic style. The church was moved twice to the rear of its original property in Hillsborough Street in 1899, when the congregation built a larger sanctuary, and then to Southeast Street in 2006, when the chapel was saved from demolition and restored for use as a wedding and event venue. Couples walk down the aisle on original wide plank pine floors, past flanking wings featuring Gothic arched windows, and say, "I do," beneath a vaulted ceiling whose exposed wood beams are lighted by lavender-tinted clerestory windows. This is the church. It's fairly wide in front, has not a very steep roof, and then it's like a second building is right behind it with a little steeper roof, and then on top of that an even steeper roof leading up to the cross. Below the cross there is a large, round stained glass window, and in the front there are two somewhat normal windows, except the upper half of the windows have broken into four sections, each of which has a curved top that comes to a point. Here's inside. Must be a wedding about to occur, because the floor is strewn with white flowers. And there's little decorations on the end of each of the chairs. They don't have pews there. They have chairs. That sounds a lot more comfortable. And here's a picture of the church being moved to the streets of Raleigh on a truck with a very wide extension to it to hold the entire church. The text here says, after the 235-pound structure was moved half a mile to its current location in 2006, All Saints Chapel was restored based on old photos down to the light fixtures and wood trim. Southern Pines Chapel is in Southern Pines. A cornerstone of the brick Colonial Revival style Southern Pines Chapel is inscribed with the date 1928, the year that the church was built by members of its congregation. Today, the non-denominational chapel has no congregation, but owner Kathy Virtue allows meetings, Bible studies, and prayer groups from other churches to gather within its walls. When the chapel turns 105 years, it will still be proclaiming the good news of the gospel. Right there in Southern Pines where it was created, Virtue says. I think that's really special. It's a brick building. It has classic Southern columns going up the front of them, round ones at the front, and then ones flat against the building at the back of the brick building. Window on either side there, and door or double door, can't tell quite. I can't tell if it's a wide door or two double doors because the column is blocking the view. It says, after tying the knot, couples step off the portico with its stately Tuscan columns. I said Southern, their Tuscan columns, into their new lives together. Owner Kathy Virtue's charitable foundation donates fees from weddings to humanitarian causes, such as building orphanages in Kenya. Inside, they have a baby grand piano and padded pews. St. Anne's Chapel at Oak Grove Retreat in Tarboro. When Kevin and Tricia Wilson bought Oak Grove Farm in 1999, the 77-year-old Gothic Revival-style St. Anne's Chapel, a former Episcopalian mission on the property, was in disrepair. The floor was unsupported and tilted like a seesaw, and boards and vines covered the one remaining stained glass window, which depicts the ascension of Christ. With Kevin's construction experience, the pair were undaunted. Now restored, the century-old chapel hosts guided meditations, yoga classes, drum circles, and weddings, and is open by appointment for quiet reflection. Our programs are all about stress reduction and fun, Tricia says. Everyone's relationship with the divine is personal. Another brick building with a couple of pieces jutting out, one for the main entrance and one for a side entrance at the end, a close-up of the stained glass, and then there's the lady standing inside in an arborway of greenery, and an inside picture showing one stained glass window. And St. Philip's Church is in Winnebago. Royal Governor Arthur Hobbs designated St. Philip's Church, built between 1754 and 1768 in the major Tape Fear colonial port of Brunswick Town, as His Majesty's Chapel. That means that if the King of England ever came to North Carolina, this is where he was going to church, says Jim McKee, site manager at the Brunswick Town and Fort Anderson State Historic Site. Dobbs was later buried inside the church in a place of honor near the chancel. It is believed that the infant son of the next royal governor, William Tryon, is buried near him. And rather than describe the picture, which is just a big old tree in front of the church, I'll read a little bit about St. Philip's Church here. In the hundreds of years since its construction, the walls of St. Philip's have survived attacks by both man and nature. The church was burned during or shortly after the Revolutionary War. Nearly a century later, the north wall served as a backstop for target practice by Confederate soldiers stationed at Fort Anderson. During the war, the church was so well built that several large-caliber Union Navy shells bounced off it, McKee says. The church has endured major hurricanes and even a direct hit by the tornado in 2020. And that is St. Philip's Church in Winnebago. Nothing inside but grass. Well, that's all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it, and you will be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, please call studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.